If you recall, we've spent a couple weeks now in 1 Corinthians 7, and the main theme of 1 Corinthians 7, the whole chapter, is marriage, divorce, remarriage, and engagement. It's all about human relationships, particularly pertaining to marriage and engagement and other such things, which is why the passage we're looking at tonight is very strange, because it seems to take a complete detour from everything Paul's been saying. It almost appears like he's lost his place, and he's not speaking anymore about issues related to marriage or divorce, and yet I can assure you he's not. He's actually establishing a principle that he wants to be present through this entire chapter and for the welfare of these Corinthian believers. And so, unlike normal, I want to read the whole passage before we look at it verse by verse, because it is, again, strange. It appears like he's taking this great detour. So we picked off last week with marriage and divorce and mixed marriages and the challenges of that. And with the mixed marriages, Paul says, hey, you know, stick with the spouse that you have as long as they'll put up with you. But if they don't, for the sake of peace, it's okay. You're free. But he says, you know, at the end in verse 16, to maybe set the stage for the veering he's going to take. Wife, for all you know, you might save your husband. Husband, for all you know, you might save your wife. You never know. But again, you just never know. So it's not positive, it's more realistic. You could, but you couldn't. You don't know. And in light of that, he moves into a section that seems like a complete detour. I'm glad now, after studying this, he makes this detour, because even though it seems out of place, you're going to see how important it is to the entirety of 1 Corinthians 7 and to really the Christian life. Because he's going to talk about being where you are and living fully in the circumstances you're in, regardless of what those circumstances may be. Bloom where you're planted is a nice colloquial way to say it. So I want to read the whole section so you can hear it, because you'll see immediately why it seems like he's deterring, like he's actually veering away from the subject altogether. Verse 17 of chapter 7. However that may be, let each of you lead the life that the Lord has assigned, to which God called you. This is my rule in all the churches. Was anyone at the time of his call already circumcised? And that should be your first clue. What? Where'd this come from? Let him not seek to remove the marks of circumcision. Was anyone at the time of his call uncircumcised? Let him not seek circumcision. Circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing, but obeying the commandments of God is everything. Let each of you remain in the condition in which you were called. Were you a slave when called? Do not be concerned about it. Even if you can gain your freedom, make use of your present condition now more than ever. For whoever was called in the Lord as a slave is a freed person belonging to the Lord, just as whoever was free when called is a slave of Christ. You were bought with a price. Do not become slaves of human masters. In whatever condition you were called, brothers and sisters, there remain with God. Now concerning virgins. So we come back to essentially people who are engaged to marriage or being set up in a match-made marriage or other such things. So we're back to the topic of marriage. And the fact is, he's never really left the topic, but he's moved on to a principle that's very important, because he's addressing people. If you think about it, and if you haven't been here the last 2 weeks, that's fine. You'll pick this up quickly. He's addressing people who have decided that either they would be more holy and spiritual if they did not involve themselves in sexual relations with their marriage, so they feel like they need to change the circumstance. And he's dealt with people who are challenged by mixed marriages, where there may be some tension and they may be led to believe that, you know, the way to actually be holy is to change the circumstance. What he's been discussing so far is a number of people that are in situations where they could easily believe, you know, if the circumstances were different, everything would be better. And of course, that's a common sentiment. I've done ministry long enough. 10.5 years, I probably bore you with it, but 10.5 years I did singles ministry, and the most common expression I heard was, if only I were married, I could really serve the Lord. But you know, right now I'm kind of on pause because I know that the best is to be married. Now that's not how Paul thinks, but that's how we think when we're thinking, I got to change my circumstance so I can actually be in a favorable position to really serve God. Of course, there are some married folk that would say, if only I was single, I could really serve the Lord. If only I was married to another person, I could really serve the Lord. There are people who say, if only I had a different job, I could really, really live out my calling to be God's own. If only I had more money, I've heard that a number of times. If I just had some more money, I could really, really serve the Lord. If only I were a different person altogether. If only, you know, I mean, if I were Mother Teresa or Billy Graham, I could really serve God, but here I am, just little old me. All of those are examples of thinking you change the circumstances and then you really will have the life that God's called you to. And Paul wants to say, hold on. God's called you where you're at. You don't want to fail to live right now where you're at in the circumstance you're in, because it's exactly within that circumstance where God is found, and it's within that circumstance where you are going to live out your calling as God's own. That's the principle he mentions a number of times in this passage. Verse 17 is where he states it most boldly. However that may be, let each of you lead the life that the Lord has assigned, to which God has called you. This is my rule in all the churches. Now I know Michelle uses the Message. The Message nails that verse, because you might get the point from that, from our New Revised Standard, but you cannot miss the point in the Message translation. And don't be wishing you were someplace else or with someone else. Where you are right now is God's place for you. Live and obey and love and believe right there. God, not your marital status, defines your life. Don't think I'm being harder on you than the others. I give this same counsel in all the churches. That's a paraphrase of what Paul is saying in verse 17, and I think it's a very good paraphrase. He wants them to bloom where they're planted. He wants them to no longer excuse their behavior on their circumstances, but to understand there's no circumstance or scenario in which they cannot live out God's calling to be God's follower. He's now going to give a couple of examples, and that's where the circumcision and slavery comes in, because he wants to talk about the examples of places we might want to change our circumstances. He wants to talk about ethnic identity, issues relating to Jews and Gentile. That's what you're talking about when you talk about circumcision and uncircumcision. He then wants to talk about social status, like enslavement. You know, if only I were free. The reason he has to give two examples is because reality's complex, and the first example doesn't cover all the options. You can't change whether you're Jewish or Gentile. But there is a possibility, if you have opportunity, to change your circumstance if you're enslaved. And so that's why he's going to give these two examples of if only. So some of them may have been thinking this, but he's just using this as an example that they could change their ethnic identity. If they could just somehow either be more Jewish, be circumcised, be someone who has originally God's mark of the covenant, or some of the Jews might be thinking, you know, it'd be easier to navigate the Corinthian culture if I was more Gentile. I wouldn't have all these Jewish hang-ups to deal with. The Jewish problems revolve around the fact that in that culture, and they were the minority, the Greco-Romans considered anyone that was circumcised to be akin to a barbarian, akin to someone being castrated. And you might think, well, when would anyone ever notice that they're uncircumcised? Well, come out of our American culture, go to Greco-Roman culture. Public baths. If you're going to bathe, you're going to bathe publicly. If you bathe publicly, you don't bathe alone. If you're circumcised or not is eventually, if people's eyes are wandering, going to be obvious. If you choose to be in any sport, all Greco-Roman sports were done naked. I'd imagine what that would do for the ratings for ESPN. But all of the sports were done nude. And so if you were a Jewish person that wanted to excel in sports, it was obvious to everyone right from the get-go that you weren't one of them. That you were an outsider, that you were a barbarian, that you're someone that is, you know, out of place. That's why, believe it or not, back then, if you were wealthy, you could have a surgery that was akin to plastic surgery to give the illusion, at least, that you had not been circumcised. Crazy sounding. I don't want to see pictures. But you could do that if you wanted, and some people did do that. So the Jews might be thinking, you know, if I could just have a different circumstance, a different identity, then life in Corinth may be easier. Some of the Gentiles might have been thinking the same thing, because they might have been persuaded by some of the Judaizers, which we'll read about in Galatians, who said, you know, in order to be a real spiritual person, you need to bear the mark of the covenant, and God has commanded God's people to be circumcised. This is what he's speaking about in verse 18. Look at it with me. Was anyone at the time of his call already circumcised? That means Jewish. Or someone who was a proselyte to Judaism? Let him not seek to remove the marks of circumcision. Was anyone at the time of his call uncircumcised? Let him not seek circumcision. So if you're looking for a different ethnic identity, don't do it. Here's why, and this is where Paul says something that is absolutely phenomenal, coming from a Hebrew of Hebrews, a Pharisee of Pharisees, one who holds the law, the Torah, in high esteem. Because he's about to say something that is very, very paradoxical, at the least contradictory, possibly. Verse 19, circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing, but obeying the commandments of God is everything. Now, here's why it's a bit contradictory. Circumcision is one of the commands for Jews under Moses. Paul's already made it clear, and if you don't recall this, we can go back to Romans 4. When we get to Galatians, we'll see the same thing, that what matters is belief in Christ. The reason why the Gentiles are so easily assimilated is they do not have to become Jews in order to know God in Christ, because it's belief in Christ that is the mark of the new covenant, the mark of the believer. So Paul is essentially saying, you know, these ethnic identities, they're nothing. And that's hard for most of us to hear. These ethnic identities are nothing. Now, he's not really wanting to talk about ethnic identity. He's talking about trying to change your circumstances. So you have to connect it back to marriage and celibacy and all these other things he's talked about, where people want to change their circumstances in order to be holy. So he's essentially saying something like this, a commentator writes. Marriage is nothing. Celibacy is nothing. Neither commends us to God. Neither's better. Neither's worse. One's not the only way. One's not the bad way. One's not the good way. Neither of those things has anything to do with our identity in Christ. Instead, what our identity has to do with is whether we have been baptized into Christ, whether we have the Spirit of Christ, whether we've believed upon Christ. And he's hoping the Corinthians will make this application, particularly those that are ready to change their circumstances, using the excuse that if they don't change their circumstance, they cannot really follow God like they feel God intends them to. He wants them to know, verse 20, let each of you remain in the condition in which you were called. Embrace your ethnic identity. Don't be troubled by it, but don't think that it's the most significant thing. The most important thing is your identity in Christ. Now, boy, we could go a lot of places with that as far as all the ethnic challenges that we face in our world. And, you know, we want to be proud of our ethnicity. At the same time, we want to recognize that there's neither Jew nor Greek, male nor female, slave or free, but all are one in Christ Jesus. Our most important identity is that we are Christ followers. And so Paul wants to say, you don't have to change your ethnic identity. You don't have to change your circumstances, and you couldn't if you wanted to. So there's no way to get out of this circumstance, and he's trying to get them to be at peace with it and see that's not a roadblock or obstacle to them following Christ. He now moves into a second category, which is a little bit more pliable, because this category could be changed on some occasions. He's going to talk about slavery. And in order to understand this, again, we have to get out of our world where we experience the horrific slavery in America and understand this is a different kind of slavery. That doesn't mean there weren't all kinds of oppressive and horrific realities, but it's different than the one we're used to as practiced in the South. In the ancient world, anywhere you go, slavery was as woven into the culture as electricity and cars are in ours. I know there's a lot of people that take a stance and they act like, you know, they're above the scriptures because, you know, everyone there is doing slavery. Well, guess what? The whole ancient Greco-Roman world was. The Persians, the Babylonians, everybody was doing it. It was as common, as much a part of the fabric of culture as electricity. They could not remove it like that any more than you could go home today and I'd say, stop using electricity. It was that part of, much a part of the fabric. And so when we think of their slavery, we have to think about it as a different thing than the unjust oppression, the use of others that we know of in light of our modern history and go back to the ancient Greco-Roman world. And in that world, some cases of slavery could provide economic security, some upward ability. You might have a master that is very powerful that would put you in a place of great responsibility in their household, and you'd actually be elevated from a low status you had to a higher status. Some slaves were highly educated and had great responsibilities within their house and were perceived as people with great honor and dignity by their master. Now, that's not to say it was all good, because there were as many, if not more, that were treated unfairly and brutally and callously. That's why Paul wants to make an exception for this circumstance. Verse 21, were you a slave when called? Don't be concerned about it. What he wants to say is you can serve God even as a slave. But even if you can gain your freedom, you know, that's a possibility. Make use of your present condition now more than ever. Now, I'm not a big fan of how the NRSV translates verse 21, but if you want to see the option it gives us, do you notice that tiny little A at the end of verse 21? Everyone see that's the use in the Pew Bible? What that means is there's an alternative reading, and the alternative reading is found at A. It's at the bottom of the other column, and you'll read, avail yourself of the opportunity. So if you use the alternative reading, you would read verse 21 as, if you can gain your freedom, avail yourself of the opportunity. The way the NRSV translated almost seems like, you know, don't just stay where you're at, just deal with it. Instead, you have a better translation, which most scholars would say is the much preferred translation. The New English Bible, for example. Were you a slave when you were called? Do not let that trouble you, in the sense that that circumstance does not preclude you from living out your calling. But if a chance of liberty should come, take it. So Paul sees that there is a possibility that that circumstance could be changed, but he does not want those in that position to use that circumstance as an excuse to say, I cannot serve God as an indentured servant. Paul says, no, you can, but you also have, if you have the opportunity to free yourself of that, then do that. You don't have to remain in this. This isn't just where you kind of grit your teeth and live out your calling. There may be an opportunity to get out of that enslavement. And whether one is able to get out of that circumstance or not, notice what Paul does by equaling the playing field in verse 22. For whoever was called in the Lord as a slave is a freed person, belonging to the Lord, because the identity in Christ matters most to Paul. You are free in Christ. And then he moves on, just as whoever was free, that would be the masters, when called, is a slave of Christ. So he's just kind of leveling the playing field. He's giving the one with the lowest status, the slave, the highest status position in God's household, that you are a free person in Christ. And then he's given the one with the highest status the lowest position in God's household. You are a servant of Christ. Either way, Paul wants them to realize, verse 23, you were bought with a price. Do not become slaves of human masters. In whatever condition you were called, there remain with God. Again, he ends as he began. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, whatever your status in life, wherever you find yourself, God is able to work in and through you in that circumstance so that you can bloom where you're planted. Now, this is a wonderful sidetrack he's making because he's talking about marriage and divorce and remarriage and engagement and virginity and those who are single and may never marry. And he wants to make sure that they all recognize none of those are better or worse than the other. They are all opportunities. They're all places in which one can fully live out God's calling. Don't think that any one of these has, if you will, an ability to trump the other as far as the only place and circumstance in which God blesses. God is able to work in and through many circumstances, including the circumstance of enslavement. And if that's the case, then Paul wants them to know that they can right now live out their calling. So that's our passage. Now I want to massage this in a little bit by, as normal, giving three reflections that take this principle and weave it into perhaps our own modern day experience. It seems like Paul understands that change happens, but the call remains the same. He talks about our identities. He talks about gender identities. He talks about ethnic identities. He talks about social identities. But the identity that matters most to the Apostle Paul is our identity in Christ. Slaves are no less accepted by God than free persons. Both belong to Christ, and their social status has no spiritual importance whatsoever. One is not more able to serve and love God than the other. Whether circumcised or uncircumcised, slave or free, married or single, engaged, divorced, all of those are inconsequential here. Which what you're really seeing is Paul developing in a very practical way a principle that he'll summarize in one wonderful nugget from Galatians. Such an important passage. When he says there's no longer Jew or Greek, there's no longer slave or free, there's no longer male or female, but all of you are one in Christ Jesus. When Paul says this, he's not saying that these things don't exist anymore. Of course they exist. He's saying that these things have no relevance to knowing God. These have no significance. One's no better than the other. They are instead all places we find ourselves, and the one who knows what Christ has done understands that it is the identity in Christ that trumps them all. And so he wants them to see that change happens, but the call remains. And since that call remains, he kind of has two things he wants them to know. Verse 19b, obey the commandments of God in everything. So you, wherever you're at, whatever circumstance, make sure you're sticking true to the commands of God in Christ as you remain in that condition. And then verse 23, don't become slaves of human masters. Don't become slaves of those who want to say your identity is simply your social status. Your identity is simply your gender. Your identity is simply your ethnic status. He wants to say, don't become slaves of people like that. Understand you're free, so that verse 24, whatever condition or circumstance you find yourself in, there know that God is able to work in and through you so that you might live out the call that God has given you in Christ. Which, I love the colloquial expression. I don't know who came up with this. You know, maybe this is one of those expressions that is old and already, you know, dead and tired and people are sick of it. It's pretty new to me, and I like it. I don't know why I like it, because like when we sing Who I am a flower quickly fading, I always have a hard time thinking I'm a flower. I can think of myself as a banana that's rotting. I can think of myself as, you know, some steel that's rusting. We need another word for that, but you know, flower quickly fading doesn't do it for me, but this one does it for me. I don't know why it's the same idea. It's the same thing, bloom, it's flowers, it's plants. And Paul wants to make it clear that there's no circumstance that's an obstacle to the Christian life, because our life has been defined by God's call, so that any situation offers opportunities to serve Christ as Lord, and he wants us to make the best of it. He is done hearing from the Corinthians, if only I was this, if only I was that, if only I had more money, if only I had a different ethnic identity, if only I had a different job. For him, those things keep people from living right now. Those are ways to just wish life away and not really engage with the call that God has placed on our lives. Paul wants them to stop trying to be someone and something they're not and become the person that God has for them in the circumstance and situation they're in. Now, this doesn't mean that Paul's inviting them to be indifferent. And that's why that enslavement illustration or example is there, because he's not telling us all to just kind of stoically accept how things are and never make any changes. He doesn't say be indifferent to your circumstances, but he does seem to be suggesting we should never be controlled by our circumstances. Martin Lloyd-Jones, an old pastor I used to read way back when I was far more Calvinistic, has a wonderful statement on this. And from his book on Philippians, he says, if you can improve your circumstances in fair and legitimate ways, by all means do so. But if you cannot, and you have to remain in a trying and difficult position, do not be mastered by it. Do not let it get you down. Do not let it control you. Do not let it determine your misery or joy. Whatever your conditions, you are not controlled by them. It seems to me that Paul is giving counsel along those lines, because what he's calling the Corinthians to is faithfulness right now. Because whatever circumstance they're in, there's one thing that's true of them, is God's called, that God is with them. And that's why the passage ends like it does. I love the last three words, the last four words. There, remain with God. In whatever condition you were called, brothers and sisters, guess what? That's where God is. That's where God's waiting to see you serve. That's where God's waiting to see you be faithful, because there's no other circumstance you have. Unless, of course, you have a freedom to be free, then take that one and still, it applies, serve God there. That's where God's going to be for you at that moment. Now, you could, with Paul, say, oh, Paul, that's a bit idealistic. And you could get away with it if we didn't know Paul's story. Because as soon as you know Paul's story, you realize that the moment he converted to Christ, he lost all of his social status. He went from being a celebrated rabbi to being someone that was persecuted, hunted down, beaten. He went from someone who was deeply cherished to someone that was imprisoned. And from prison, oh, did I go too far? From prison, he writes this passage in Philippians, which I know you've heard many times before, but maybe not connected it to this passage, where he says, and this is a number of years later, from prison, I've learned to be content with whatever I have. I know what it is to have little, and I know what it is to have plenty. In any and all circumstances, I've learned the secret of being well fed and of going hungry, of having plenty and of being in need. God remains with me. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me. Now, the thing I've always loved about this passage, and maybe you've noticed it, maybe you haven't, is that this wasn't something that happened by osmosis. Paul learned it. Maybe he was speaking idealistically here. Maybe he was speaking with a little bit of naivety here. But by the time we get to Philippians, we know that what he says here, he has applied himself to, and he's learned that in whatever circumstance, because you cannot say that from prison unless you really have come to believe it. Paul is saying this in a circumstance which is so bad, and yet he's able to see. And when we get to Philippians, you'll see in Philippians 1, he says, hey, I'm talking to a lot of the guards here. Some of them are converting to the Christian faith. He's serving God in the midst of that. Philippians is known as his letter of joy. He talks about joy more often than any other letter. Joy, joy, joy in every chapter. And then you start to realize he's in prison. He can't do what he wants to do. His circumstances are the worst possible for someone who's a people person, someone who wants to go out with the gospel, and yet he's learned to make something of it, and he's learned to express it in such a way that others might be able to also do the same. So once you do that, you can then come back to our opening verse and get a sense of what Paul's saying. Don't be wishing you were someone else or someplace else. Where you are right now is God's place for you. Live and obey and love and believe right there. Now, this is where the sermon ended until I saw the people sitting there at the A meeting. Some people got there early, and I started thinking, you know, those are some difficult circumstances to be in. We're in difficult circumstances. We had major flooding this morning. There are circumstances that are very challenging. There are people in this very room going through very difficult circumstances. So, you know, I approach this with the sense that there are challenges for us all. There are circumstances that I think if we're all honest with ourselves, we'd change. We'd change in a heartbeat if we could, and we'd think that, you know, then I could be more faithful. then I could really, really live out God's calling. And so I'm thinking of the people there in the AA, and I was thinking, you know, it's interesting because when Paul says, remain where you are, but if you're able to make it better, make it better. You know, if you're a slave, but you can be free, get better. I started thinking, you know, that sounds a lot like the wonderful tension of the Serenity Prayer that the AA and NA folk pray regularly. God, give me grace to accept with serenity the things that cannot be changed, but also courage to change the things which should be changed, and of course the wisdom to distinguish the one from the other. And it made me think, I think you can put both of Paul's examples of the circumcision, the ethnic kind of status, and then the social status of enslavement, and see how both of those are interplaying in this very prayer that, you know, God's with me in my circumstance, but perhaps there are things and circumstances that I should change, but I need wisdom to be able to distinguish the one from the other, because if I think that the thing that can be changed is the thing that's not going to be changed, I'm going to be frustrated and disappointed and maybe not live out right now God's calling for me. That's why I also love this prayer, and I want to close with this. You've heard the Serenity Prayer, right? Most of you heard this before. Have you ever heard of the other Serenity Prayer? Because even this can be a challenge. You know, it asks us to have serenity, but it's saying that, you know, if you can change, make a change. There's the other Serenity Prayer. It was written by a woman. I don't know her name right now, and I didn't put it on the screen. I should have. Where she kind of felt at times, even this might guilt trip out someone in an AA meeting, trying very hard to figure out how to move forward, how to live in the situation they're in. And so she came up with this Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to stop beating myself up for not doing things perfectly, the courage to forgive myself because I'm working on doing better, and the wisdom to know that you already love me just the way I am. That's a good prayer. It's just as good as the other one. You probably ought to pray both. But this one has this wonderful way of saying, you know, that courage to change the things we should and the wisdom to know, that might be harder than it seems. And so maybe the way we can inhabit our circumstances fully and freely is to know right now the wisdom we need is to know that God is there. That we are loved right where we are in the circumstance we're in at this very moment. That God is able to use us, work in and through us in that circumstance, even as we're not doing things perfectly, even as we have to kind of forgive ourselves for maybe not choosing what could be a better option, and understand that verse 24, in whatever condition you're called, there remain with God. Would you pray with me?